Morning. The Lord is my shepherd, David famously said in Psalm 23. But what does that mean? David himself knew what it meant to be a shepherd. It was typically a task that was assigned to the runt of the family litter. When the prophet Samuel came to Jesse's house, looking for the next king of Israel, Jesse trotted out all his impressive sons, all but one. And when Samuel asked, "Are all your sons here?" Jesse said, "Well, there's the youngest, but he's out there in the fields keeping the sheep." What could Samuel, what could the Lord possibly want with a sheep boy? And yet that's exactly who the Lord was looking for. In fact, all the patriarchs of Israel, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, were shepherds. Joseph was a shepherd. Moses was a shepherd. Even going all the way back to Genesis 4, Abel was a keeper of sheep. So what is it about shepherds that makes them stand out in God's eyes? And more importantly, why would David come to see the Lord as his shepherd? To answer this question, we're going to let Psalm 23 paint a picture for us. It's on page 295 in your prayer books if you need to reference it. But to begin with, here's a story by a certain Reverend E.E.F. Bishop. He says, during the riots in Palestine in the middle 1930s, a village near Haifa was condemned to collective punishment by having its sheep and cattle sequestered by the government. The inhabitants, however, were permitted to redeem their possessions at a fixed price. Among them was an orphan shepherd boy whose 6 or 8 sheep and goats were all he had in the world for life and work. Somehow he obtained the money for the redemption. He went to the big enclosure where the animals were penned, offering his money to the British sergeant in charge. The NCO told him he was welcome to the requisite number of animals, but ridiculed the idea that he could possibly pick out his little flock from among the confiscated hundreds. The little shepherd thought differently, because he knew better. And giving his own call, for he had his shepherd's pipe with him, his own separated from the rest of the animals and trotted out after him. For sheep to belong to a shepherd, they must have intimate familiarity with him. They know the sound of his voice and can even recognize it through the tune of a pipe. They followed him for many miles as he slowly walked ahead of them and sang his call or played his tune, and they're eager to follow him and no other. Whether it's out of the collective town sheepfold where they spent the night, or from a spring at midday where they've mingled with other flocks to drink, sheep will immediately separate themselves at the call of their own shepherd and gather to him. The sheep hear his voice, Jesus says in John 10, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. It was when Jesus called Mary Magdalene by name at the empty tomb that she recognized that it was him. When Jesus called Lazarus by name, he came back from the dead. As Alistair Roberts notes, even the grave cannot prevent the sheep from hearing their shepherd's voice. Why are sheep so eager to follow their shepherd when they hear him? Because he makes them lie down in green pastures. Just knowing where the good pastures are is not enough, though that can be a job in itself in a place like Israel. The thing about sheep is that they won't lie down and rest unless they are free from all fear, anxiety, agitation, and even inter-sheeple tensions. I'm not sure that's a word, but you know what it means. They're often too restless and discontented to relax. And it's no wonder. Apart from butting heads with each other, sheep are completely defenseless. Pastor and former shepherd Philip Keller says that as long as there is even the slightest suspicion of danger from dogs, coyotes, cougars, bears, or other enemies, the sheep stand up, ready to flee for their lives. They have little or no means of self-defense. They are helpless, timid, feeble creatures whose only recourse is to run. The unique aspect of the picture is that it is only the shepherd himself who can make it possible for them to lie down, to rest, to relax, to be content and quiet and flourishing. In the course of time, I came to realize that nothing so quieted and reassured the sheep as to see me in the field. Providing this protection is no small thing either. Typically, when we think of shepherds and their flocks, we have, well, pastoral imagery in our minds. Idyllic, tranquil countrysides with rolling green hills, probably somewhere in England. I'm pretty sure there are a few of those pictures on the walls of this building. You see it and you think, that looks pretty nice. I think I could take an afternoon nap there. But this is a far cry from what came to mind when Jesus' hearers thought of shepherds keeping watch of their flocks by night. Gone is the soft, domesticated Bob Ross landscape. If anything, shepherds were associated with violence and death, struggles with wild beasts, bandits, and the perils of the wilderness. It would make a great reality TV survival show. It certainly changes the metaphor of what it means to be a pastor. Good shepherds suffer hardship and stand in harm's way for the sake of their flock. And this is why the presence of such a shepherd brings reassurance and peace. As Psalm 4 says, I will lay me down in peace and take my rest, for you, Lord, only make me dwell in safety. The sheep follow the voice of their shepherd because they know he leads them to rest and refreshment. They know he stands guard so that they can enjoy quiet pastures and still waters. He is their doorway to abundance. In fact, in places like Israel, shepherds have to take their sheep farther and farther out from the village to find uneaten grass as the fields around their town are consumed and dried up during the summer months. Far out in the country are rudimentary sheepfolds they've built where flocks can spend the night. Unlike the communal sheepfold back in the village, these are nothing more than a stone wall made of uncut field stones. No roof, nowhere to even hang a door. Just a circular enclosure with an open gap. Once the sheep are inside the fold, the shepherd lays down across the gap overnight to keep the sheep in and the predators out. He quite literally becomes the door. Jesus said in John 10, truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd. And yet, even with all this care and protection, sheep are stubborn and thick-headed animals that are prone to go astray. Ring any bells? If a sheep wanders off and realizes that it's lost, it tries to hide itself and begins to quiver and bleat, which unfortunately only attracts the attention of predators. If the lost sheep is to be saved, the shepherd has to go after it and find it quickly. And he'll probably have to carry it back because it will likely be too traumatized to walk. Kenneth Bailey points out that this is the deeper meaning of he restores my soul in verse 3 of David's psalm. Bailey says that in the English language, he restores my soul has often meant some form of I was depressed and the Lord restored my soul and helped me to feel better about myself and my world. The literal translation, he brings me back makes clear that the sheep is lost, and the good shepherd is obliged to go after it, find it, and carry it back. Back to what? To the right path. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way, says Isaiah 53. But he restores my soul. He brings me back and leads me on in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. He has a reputation to uphold. A good shepherd never loses his sheep. What do you think, Jesus asks in Matthew 18, if a man has 100 sheep and one of them goes astray, does he not leave the 99 on the mountain and go in search of the one that went astray? And if he finds it, truly I say to you, he rejoices over it more than over the 99 that never went astray. So it is not the will of my Father who is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish. And in John 6, this is the will of him who sent me, that I should lose nothing of all that he has given me, but raise it up on the last day. And this brings us to the heart of David's psalm. The Father has entrusted the sheep into Jesus' hand, and Jesus promises to raise each one of them up. But from what? From the valley of the shadow of death, the valley of deepest darkness. You see, even those sheep who follow the Good Shepherd faithfully will find themselves in dark places. He leads them into ominous valleys with steep cliffs that appear to have no way out. David found himself walking through such a valley on more than one occasion. And as he writes about it in verse 4 of his psalm, we see a remarkable shift in his language. No longer is he speaking about the Lord, his shepherd, leading the way some distance ahead of him. He says, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. David is speaking to his shepherd, who is right there beside him. Emmanuel, God who is with me. In writing Psalm 27, David says, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom then shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom then shall I be afraid? As with David, there are times when our good shepherd leads us through the valley. It could be a valley of circumstance where the challenges of our life threaten to overwhelm us. It could be a valley of doubt or suffering. We can be led into the valley of physical death, the death of a loved one, or ultimately our own. Or perhaps darkest of all, we can be led into the valley of our own sin and shame, where we come face to face with who we truly are before a holy God. There is no darkness out there so great as the spiritual darkness we find in ourselves. Entering into that valley, as David did, means to enter a dark night of the soul, the total blackness, where the path before us disappears and we can't see any light at the other end. It's the very threat and shadow of death, because to enter that valley is a dying of our ego, our pride, our self-righteousness, a dying of the person we thought we were, the person we presented to the world and to ourselves. It's a dying of our will to save our lives, a letting go of everything we thought we desperately needed to hold on to, because that's where our shepherd is leading us. And even there, in that valley of our cross, he is with us. The voice of the Good Shepherd speaks our name and leads us through it, step by step, because he knows the way. He has been through the darkest valley already, the valley of condemnation, of suffering, of death itself. He has been through it for our sake, because the true mark of the Good Shepherd is that he lays down his life for his sheep. Joseph Ratzinger writes, "The true shepherd is one who knows even the path that passes through the valley of death, one who walks with me on the path of final solitude, where no one can accompany me, guiding me through. He himself has walked this path. He has descended into the kingdom of death. He has conquered death, and he has returned to accompany us now and to give us the certainty that together with him, we can find a way through." The shepherd doesn't just show us the way through life. He shows us the way through death. Jesus said, "If any would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me." Church of the Good Shepherd, do you know the shepherd's voice? Can you recognize it in the midst of the many other voices of this world? Do you trust him enough to follow him wherever he leads you, even into the valley? Jesus is the true shepherd because he has laid down his life for us. No matter how dark the valley, he is with us. His rod and his staff protect and guide us. His mercy and goodness continually follow us. He goes after the lost, carries the weak on his shoulders, and cures the crippled. He prepares a table for us and anoints us. He leads us from pasture to pasture, through valleys to higher and higher ground, to the place of freedom he has prepared for us. He who sits on the throne will shelter them with his presence. They shall hunger no more, neither thirst any more. The sun shall not strike them, nor any scorching heat. For the Lamb in the midst of the throne will be their shepherd, and he will guide them to springs of living water, and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. In the words of Malcolm Guite, we have the only shepherd who still knows what it is like to be a lamb. And this is why we can confidently say with David, "The Lord is my shepherd." Jesus said, "I am the good shepherd." The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. "I give them eternal life, and they will never perish, and no one will snatch them out of my hand."